Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
No Paul Koharski. He's off this week. Did John's feature post at paulkoharski.com yet, Chad? Do we know?
I'm going to go to paulkoharski.com right now for an update.
It's the longest piece. It's not up there. It's the longest piece that John says he's ever written, which I can't wait to read on why he believes Vrabel can be successful in Nashville. John McClain joins us here on the show. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's the longest column I've ever written. It would be way too long to write for a newspaper because of space limitations, but no space limitations in cyberspace. Paul said whatever you want, so I wrote the equivalent of about 50 inches, and I hope people will read it. I'll be tweeting it as soon as I find out it's posted. I forgot when Paul said he was going to post it. I think it's might be Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on it, because I do know this. Whatever day it posts, it'll be up by Friday when you join us again, and we will recap it with you here on the show.
So I just left an OTA of the Texans. Bill O'Brien spoke out strongly about the Santa Fe shootings down here and how the politicians need to get together and enact laws that keep kids safe when they go to schools. Of course, that's what everybody's saying. People say a lot of stuff, but until the politicians get off their butts and do something, nothing's going to change. And Sean Watson was on the field. People were fired up about that. He didn't participate in the team drills. He threw the ball in individual drills. He had a brace on his right knee. They don't want him doing anything in which linemen or tight ends or running backs could be slip and fall and fall into his knee. So they'll take it easy on him, as they have been during the off-season program. By all this, when the music came on, he started dancing, and so when they report to training camp, he'll be 100%.
Johnson, you brought up the Santa Fe High School shooting from last week. Just another amazing show of charity on J.J. Watt's part to pay for the funerals. That was amazing.
Well, not only, when I found out about that on Friday night, I tweeted it at 10:30 p.m., and by the next morning, it had over 35,000 retweets. And I barely got anything in the paper, like three paragraphs, because of deadlines. And as you guys can imagine, there was so much going on in Houston about the shootings, and all media, social media especially. And so people kill him when he does these gestures and saying he promotes it, he announces it. No, he does not. He doesn't announce those things. I didn't get it from him. And so yesterday he spent time down there at the hospital visiting survivors and then going to the school and speaking with the superintendent. Then I think he went to the police station and to first responders. That's what it was. Because as you guys can imagine, everywhere he goes, it's a massive story. And, you know, I'd like to these morons that rip him for doing things to get attention. You know, what is he supposed to do, not do them? So I'll just say this. I've told you guys this since 2011. I got to know why. Everything he does is genuine. There's nothing phony about it. People don't like that he's on social media a lot. And as he tells them, you know, I got over 3 million followers, and they're following me for a reason. They want to know what I'm doing. I tell you this, if I had 3 million followers, I'd be putting on Twitter everything I do. Plus, I'd be on Instagram and Snapchat and everything else if I had 3 million followers.
I love to think of a world with John McClain on Snapchat also. John, Tom Brady.
In the old days, yeah. Snapchat would have been great
back
when I was playing in the band.
Oh, my.
Oh, well, we could have watched some little snippets of video of you guys performing. It would have been great. John, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski both not participating in OTAs with the Patriots. And now news comes out today that they are participating with workouts and treatment with the TB12 method, which is just a few miles away from the facility there in Foxborough. What do you make of this story with those two not participating?
Well, Gronkowski is about money. Once his deal gets done, he'll be in. Brady, who's always taken less money on purpose because his wife makes like $80 million a year. But Brady's, they say, is not money related. It is almost philosophy related. He's angry because some of the other players have started going to Alex Guerrero, his guru. Well, the problem is that, and I don't blame the team. You spend a lot of money on trainers, doctors, equipment. They want the others to work out at their facility, and some of them have reached out to Guerrero, and the team doesn't like it, and they're encouraging them not to do Guerrero. So there is a kind of a stalemate between Brady and Belichick.
There's something going on there, John. It's just weird that they're doing this this TB12 stuff within the same distance of the practice facility. I don't know how far it is from where they're actually working out.
Oh, it's right by it. His office is right there. It's just not, he can't work anymore inside the dressing room, but Patriot Place, which is connected to the stadium, he's got an office there, and that's where Brady works out. It's so easy for players to get there. And truthfully, if Tom Brady's doing the things that he's doing at his age, I think if I was the Patriots, I would embrace some of the methods that Guerrero has used on him.
Well, is there a chance we look back at Alex Guerrero as the Yoko Ono of the Patriots dynasty, even if what he's doing is working for Tom Brady? Because it is certainly causing a divide between two of the team leaders and the Patriots way.
I don't think Yoko did anything positive for the Beatles the way Guerrero's doing with Brady, which works tremendously for the Patriots. So it's philosophical, and Brady knows when he's got to be there, and he'll be there when he has to. Now, the only thing mandatory about the off-season program is the 3-day mini camp. If you don't make it, you get fined, and I've known Brady to get fined. So I'm guessing if he stays out the whole off-season program, which I can't imagine he would because he's got new receivers he needs to work with, although I think he has a thing scheduled for after the off-season program when they have like 6 weeks. I believe he has a thing scheduled with the receivers. I don't know if it's in – I think it's in California because I read back when people were saying he might retire, it's going to be hard to retire when he's got a camp set up on his own with them.
John, I mentioned going to break that this was going to be an awesome segment with you for stories on Billy Cannon. And I will never forget the story that you tell of Bud Adams standing underneath the goalpost recruiting Billy Cannon to play for the Houston Oilers in the AFL instead of signing with the NFL. Will you set the scene for us on that?
He won, as a lot of historians know, LSU won the national championship in 58. He won the Heisman in 59. The Rams, with general manager Pete Rozelle, they were trying to sign him. The Oilers, with Bud Adams, were trying to sign him. And Bud told me he actually signed him before the season and that he signed him at his house and he threw in his wife's white Cadillac convertible that Billy Cannon wanted to give to his daddy. And Bud gave him Nancy's keys and he drove it back to Baton Rouge. Now, then later in November, he signed with the Rams. Well, he wanted to go to the Oilers because they offered him more money. Bud offered to make him the first $100,000 player. He signed him to a 3-year deal for $33,000 a year and then threw in a $10,000 signing bonus. So they got a sympathetic judge who said Pete Rozelle took advantage of him being a naive Louisiana boy. And so he stuck with the Oilers. And then Pete Rozelle, shortly thereafter, was named NFL commissioner at 34.
34 years old.
I believe that's right. He was voted commissioner in January after signing Cannon in November.
And he gave away Nancy's car, is that right?
Gave away Nancy's white Cadillac convertible. When she found out that night, she said, "Bud, where's my car?" He just bought it brand new. She said, "You put it in the garage?" He said, "Not exactly." She said, "What happened to that nice young man from Louisiana?" Said, "Well, he drove back in your car." And she said, "Bud, you get me another one tomorrow." So he did. And he said they were celebrating at a restaurant the signing, and the owner, a guy named Sonny Look, had a famous restaurant then, came into the restaurant and said, "Whoever has a white Cadillac convertible in the parking lot, it is on fire." And so what happened, Bud or Nancy or both of them, I guess smoked then, got out, thumped a cigarette, thinking it was going to go in the parking lot, and went in the back seat of the car. So as it burned, and everybody in the restaurant went out to watch it, Nancy said, "Bud," and he said, "I know, honey, get you another Cadillac convertible." So she had three white Cadillac convertibles in about a week, according to what Bud Adams told me.
So, John, the collusion lawsuit from Colin Kaepernick against the NFL continues. Mike Florio with the report that internal franchise documents generated as part of the free agency evaluation process and testimony from witnesses harvested via depositions in the collusion litigation has established that teams viewed Kaepernick not only as being good enough to be employed by an NFL team, but to be a starting quarterback for an NFL team. Where do you think all of this is heading with Colin Kaepernick versus the NFL?
Nowhere, because number one, you can all think he's a great quarterback and say you're not signing because of the protest. You can do that. Everybody can get away with that. But if they find evidence that either the league and a team, at least one team, or at least two teams, if they find evidence where they said, "Look, let's don't sign this kid because of the protesting," then that's collusion, and he'd get a lot of money, which, of course, would be chicken feed to the NFL owners. But they can tell him, "We think you're going to go to the Hall of Fame, but we're not signing you because we don't like you. We don't like your politics. We don't like your influence." They can all do that, but that's not collusion.
So, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's never publicly stated that he would stop the protest if he signed, right?
No. Adam Schefter reported in March before free agency that he would not do it anymore. He's never commented on anything. And unlike Johnny Manziel, I wonder if he had gone on a tour, like Johnny Manziel went on his publicity tour and got everybody all of a sudden writing, "Well, maybe this kid deserves another chance in the NFL." Maybe if Kaepernick had done that, let everybody know exactly what he was standing for, maybe it would work out different. But the NFL owners are not signing him because they would be bombarded with sponsors, club seat holders, individual ticket holders. They let teams know last year, the fans did, they were not happy about Kaepernick's politics or anybody's politics, and that's why they wish it would go away, and that's why they joined forces with the Players Coalition. But some of the players dropped out of that coalition because they think they sold out. The way I look at that, if the coalition is getting, say, $50 million from the NFL to spend on social causes, and to get that money for the social causes, they have to agree not to kneel. That is a small price to pay to help social causes.
John, you brought up Johnny Manziel. He is back to playing football in the CFL for the Hamilton Tiger Cats and head coach June Jones, who you know very well. What do you think about Johnny Manziel's decision and the fit with June Jones and what it all means for Johnny Manziel long term for the game?
When June was at SMU, he wanted to recruit Manziel coming out of high school, but of course he went to Texas A&M. and June has always liked him. Now that June's in Canada where the field's wider, the more mobile you are, the better you are. But the kid he had last year, Mazzoli, who had been kicked out of Oregon, he played really well. So Manziel will have to beat him out. There's no guarantee he's going to come up there and beat him out. Manziel's going to have to prove on and off the field that he's gotten his act together. He's got 2 years to do it. And if he does it and takes advantage of the system that is perfect for his skill set, that relies on a quarterback's mobility, throwing on the run, with a head coach who loves him, then in 2 years, when he's 27 years old, he would be an unrestricted free agent. And June Jones, who's been a head coach in the NFL twice and assistant forever, he could tell everybody, this kid has turned it around on and off the field. You should give him a chance. But what are the odds that's going to happen? You know, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it over, say, a year that Manziel has really turned it around.
I wonder what it does for viewership of the CFL. Like, I'm willing to watch a game now if he's playing.
I'm watching it. If he's on and he's playing, in fact, I'll watch it just because of Jim Jones now that he's the head coach. And he did last year, but I didn't pay any attention. But I'm fascinated to see what Manziel can do. Also, if he doesn't win the starting job, how's he going to handle it?
Yeah, I know you. What you just said about Mazzoli, I can't help but think Manziel, he's going to play, right? I mean, yeah, they're going to have him. I think he will.
He's got to earn it. Mazzoli last year had like 15 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, replacing a MVP who got hurt and was out for the year and has since been traded. And I know from talking to Jim, he really likes him, but I also know he loves Manziel.
Yeah. And I also wonder what this could do for future decisions for quarterbacks, because all of these quarterbacks over the years, we've always talked, oh, what's Vince Young going to do now? Is he actually going to go to the CFL? So-and-so owns his rights. No, he's not going to do that. He's going to wait on a team to sign him. He's just going to go back to the University of Texas. But if Manziel goes to the CFL and performs well, does that open the door for more of these types of comeback stories? Not all of them will end up the same way, and Manziel may flop for all we know. But I for one, am actually hoping that this does open the door for more QBs and other former NFL players who want to stay active and try to get back in the league, actually take this route and go play football instead of just talking about it.
Or young guys who are drafted in the 6th or 7th round and they want a chance to play instead of being on a practice squad or a developmental quarterback. I think this would open doors for the quarterbacks. I also think it would open doors to the CFL. You know, they don't want somebody coming up who doing it just because he's desperate or he's not going to work. You know, I said from the get-go, Vince Young should have gone up there like 3 or 4 years before he did, but for whatever reason, he wouldn't do it. And then when he did, it was too late. Manziel, it's not too late. He can be what Warren Moon was. Warren was an unrestricted free agent who signed a contract at the time, was the largest in NFL history. Manziel's not going to get the largest in history. But if he plays the way people thought he could play when he came out of Texas A&M, he's got a chance to make a lot of money.
John, the NFL owners meetings going on today and tomorrow in Atlanta. What are the big points of emphasis at this owner meeting going on currently down in Georgia?
Well, of course, I'm interested and glad the Titans are, Nashville's going to get the draft. That'll be incredible. They are going to order 2 more Super Bowls. And then they're going to talk about the protesting. They're not going to vote on it. And then, you know, gambling will be a topic. It was at Orlando in the spring meetings, but now that it's been passed, it will be on the agenda. This is a short meeting. Usually there's not much to do except award Super Bowls, but this one's got a lot on the docket.
And we do know today that the ownership approved the Panthers sale for $2.275 billion, most of that in cash, which is just insane. David Tepper is now the owner of the Carolina Panthers. It was a formality. We knew it was going to get approved, John. I would love to know the back and forth behind the scenes, the politicking that goes on during a sale of a franchise before it even gets to the vote. I'd love to know, because Tepper was not the highest bid from what I've been reading. He was just the one that all the owners could agree on.
They agreed on him because some of them knew him a little bit from being a minor partner in the Steelers. Now, you know, Jimmy Haslam was a minor partner with the Steelers, and then after he was approved for the Browns, he embarrassed the league with all that pilot flying J legal trouble. And I just feel Tepper, they took less money because they knew him, and instead of providing 30% up front, he was able to do, I think, all or just about all up front.
John, I would love to read a book or watch a documentary on how a billionaire becomes an NFL owner and all of the backroom dealings and relationship building you have to do, because there's plenty of billionaires that would love to be an NFL owner, but yet it's still such an exclusive club. So what makes David Tepper more special than other billionaires out there who would also love to own a team? I would love to know the behind the scenes behind all of that.
Well, keep in mind, Chad and Jonathan, there's a lot of guys that can make billions in the real world and then become a franchise owner and look like morons. And we've seen it time and time again in every sport. And you wonder, how in the world did that guy make that kind of money? And you don't know about Tepper. He may be a great owner. He may turn out to be a buffoon. We just don't know. And the owners of everybody that is an, just keep in mind, all the owners that have been an embarrassment through the decades have been approved by the other owners, and you wonder, how could they not know some of these things?
And for listeners who don't know, it is 24 votes of the 32 owners for the approval of a sale of a franchise like this. There were other bids. I mean, there was the guy who owns Fanatics. I think he didn't feel like he could get the 24 votes needed. Same thing for a guy out of Charleston, South Carolina, that wanted to purchase the team there and purchase it for more, but they weren't able to sell it because of the required votes of the 24 at the owners' meetings.
If you guys had 2.275 lying around, would you spend it on an NFL franchise?
Yes. I mean, if I had it lying around, that'd be fun to me. I'm a huge sports fan, though, so that'd be cool to own an NFL team.
I guess if you've got a jet and a yacht and a helicopter and you can buy anything and do anything in the world and you're looking for something different, why not an NFL franchise?
And, I mean, you're going
to
make money.
You're going to make money
every year off of owning that team.
Off of TV,
You know that. So it's a great deal.
John, and the value only keeps going up.
That's right. John, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you Friday.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you.
John McClain with us twice a week here on the show.